This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
We are the Agony Uncles. I'm Uncle Dave.
And I'm Uncle Si. And yes, we're back to solve another truckload of troubles. And so, to bring us your bothers, it's Mr. Jeeves, as always.
Yes, hello. Nice to see you all. Yeah, this week, lots of, well, not lovely problems. It's not really nice to say lovely problems, but lots of things for us to get dug into. And a couple of them are cookery-based, so we're going to go with a couple of culinary issues today, because I think there's obviously a need that you can fulfill.
And the good bitch is back. The Prada of problems, the Tiffany of our troubles, it's Posh Tash.
Morning. Do you know what I just thought you said? I just thought you said, oh, the good bitch, she's back. You actually said the good bit, didn't you? The good bit, she's back.
Tash, it's me. Would I say that?
No, actually, that's very true. You would not. No, you're very charming and lovely to me.
Let's get solving. Wiggle your jingle finger, dude.
Bingy de bong 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 bing.
Hello, hairy bikers. Here is my request. I have got a problem that I must get off my chest. Won't you listen to my story like a hairy Jack and Ori? Because I heard your advice is the best.
In today's filing cabinet of calamity, Uncle Si, Uncle Dave and Posh Tash, you're going to be helping our lovely podcast family to help solve these dilemmas and disasters. We have in a lather over lava. We have some beer batter bother. We have swipe left stress. And I don't know why I write them so difficultly. And in confidential corner, we have my fella's feely foibles. But our first problem is called in a lather over lava. And it comes from Anna, who's in Kew,
who says, Dear Uncle Si and Uncle Dave, I've only just discovered your podcast. I'm having a real laugh listening to them all. Thank you. I was just wondering if you could help me with a recipe idea. You see, my dad is Welsh and enjoys eating lava bread. He's in his early 80s. He can only really eat it when I pop home to see him, though, as Mum doesn't like the taste. She also doesn't like the smell of a cooked breakfast. However, when I'm at home, we have bacon with eggs and lava bread patties fried with oats. It's such a great flavour combination. He looks forward to me visiting. He's also made a starter in the past, adding it to cockles and bacon. But have you got any other ideas? I added it to scrambled egg the other day, which is also very tasty, but looked revolting. Thank you so much. Look forward to hearing more of you and listening and giggling to the podcasts. That's Anna in Kew. Over to you.
Around the corner from me.
Oh, I love lava bread, Kingy, don't you?
Oh, so
it's so tasty.
Yeah.
It's like, dare I say it, what is it?
Lava bread, it's a type of edible harvested seaweed that's very popular in Wales. But it's like it's quite a gentle taste, isn't it? And it's the texture is quite loose. But traditionally, I mean, it's nice eating with cockles, but we kind of, I think we used to render some bacon fat down, toast some oats in it, then put the lava bread in it. And again, it's great with cockles and a bit of malt vinegar.
I'll tell you what I did with it once, because it was actually after I'd been to yours, Dave, and I got some Morecambe Bay shrimp.
Yeah.
And I literally just put cockles through it, Morecambe Bay shrimp, the bacon, the lot, and just put it together with the oats. It was fantastic. So I just layered up those. It was so, so lovely. But particularly, I did more Morecambe Bay shrimp than I did the other ingredients other than the oats. Oh, it was superb.
It looks kind of green and slimy. At first, but the taste is different to its looks. It's really Moorish. I know someone been filming in Wales sometimes, some nice hotels, they have it on the breakfast table and just go mad for it. But said the oats and the bacon, it's so tasty, and cockles.
So the word bread is slightly deceiving. It's not a bread.
Well, it's a cultural reference to what was available at the time. So no, you're right. It's not a bread. But
right, okay.
When you mix it with oats, it's not bread because it's not flour based.
It's sort of more of a moisture serving. Yeah. Okay.
So lovely.
Yeah, having said that, I have made bread with it.
Yes, that's true.
I mix lava bread into my everyday loaf, and it gives it a colour, and obviously it's the health benefits of lava bread. It's monster. mm-hmm. you know, with iron and everything you need, really. It's one of those superfoods that we should be eating. Funny enough, I looked it up. I wanted some the other day, and not living in Wales, and you can get it on Tinternet in tins. I don't know how good it'll be, but then, as I say, you tend to do something with it, like with bacon and oatmeal.
Lava bread. Oh, I see. There. Oh, interesting.
It's what poor people eat, Tash.
No, stop it. Not that bad. I am actually half Welsh, so I feel really guilty that I actually don't realise know it.
Andrew, but she's just admitted it over millions.
Sorry.
20,000 years that's listening.
Oh, no.
I never lived there. I've been in Surrey so long, I've forgotten my roots. So he's describing that letter that as a breakfast food, and you're describing it with cockles. Is it known for being a breakfasty thing with bacon, fats, and is that normal, or is it actually just a dinner time or lunchtime food?
Well, I think historically it was any time you wanted to eat it, really. But I think it's kind of in the modern world, it's kind of moved over to breakfast time.
Oh, it has. Okay.
Yeah, because you don't wait. I mean, it was on the menu for lunch and sometimes for dinner in very nice restaurants. It's. You know, I mean, obviously in fine dining, it's refined a little bit more, but mm-hmm. the tradition of the flavour is still there. It's fine.
Yeah, to me, it's a breakfast savoury. Yeah. You know, it's a bit like an old 40. If you go to Ireland, you've got your bit of black pudding, your white pudding. You go to Scotland, you hope there's haggis on the breakfast table. Go to Wales, you hope for lava bread. I found out what we did, actually, in the Hairy Bikers Go Local, when we were trying to introduce chefs to produce around them, and one was a seaweed farm in Wales. We made some seaweed bread, so it was with dulse. You had to be very careful whether it was a mixture of kelp and dulse, but seaweed really enriches the bread. And we made this posh bruschetta with lava bread, cockles, crispy bacon, and on the side we served that with a crab and charred chicory salad.
Wow.
But it was epic. Do you remember the posh bruschetta?
I do, yes.
It's like a seaweed fest. But again, we stuck pretty, you know, with the bacon and cockles, we kept it pretty... Oh, authentic, really.
Sounds quite salty. Is it quite salty? With you doing seaweed and bacon and I've got a heavy salt-laden taste.
No, not really. Not particularly. Oh. Not in the hands of us. It was fine.
No, of course not.
Yes.
Apologies. Yes.
It's good. Good stuff. Soup would be good. You make good soup with it. I'm just trying to think what you could do with it. You know, lava breads in soup would be nice. I wonder if you could mix it with spinach.
Yeah, why not?
But no, it's nice. It's nice stuff, and with seafood as well.
I mean, obviously, it's come from Wales, but is it not found or used like that? I mean, obviously, the Japanese use seaweed a lot, don't they? But is it really just particular to Wales?
I mean, I think that the culture of eating it is particular to Wales, but I'm not entirely sure whether the particular seaweed is just from Wales. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, actually.
No, interesting.
Yeah, it's made from an edible seaweed consumed mainly in Wales as part of a local traditional cuisine. The seaweed is commonly found on the west coast of Great Britain and the coast of Ireland, where it is known as sleabach. It's smooth in texture and forms delicate sheet-like thali, often clinging to rocks. It is good, brownish in colour, but boils down to a dark green pulp when prepared. So hence, well, it's like lava seaweed has a high content of dietary minerals, particularly iodine and iron. The high iodine content gives a seaweed a distinctive flavour in common with olives and oysters.
Oh, interesting. That sounds like it had great health benefits coming from the sea, doesn't it? Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it is good. It is good. Eaten with bacon and cockles, part of a Welsh breakfast. It can also be used to make a sauce to accompany lamb. I can see that working, Kingy.
Oh, yeah. Bloody hell, I didn't realise that. Ooh.
Crab, monkfish, etc. And to make lava soup. And Richard Burton was quoted as describing lava bread as Welshman's caviar.
Oh, nice.
Well,
nice.
There you go, Anna. Lots of suggestions there for Welshman's caviar and a bit of posh bruschetta. And away you go.
That's how we got Elizabeth Taylor into bed, you know.
Splodging with lava bread.
Tush. That's another term for a green monster.
Food makes everything better.
Okay, on to our next issue, which is called Beer Batter Bother. And this comes from Rod. And Rod says this, "Hello, Hairy Boys and Posh Tash. I love your beer batter recipe from the Mums Know Best series. It's a winner," he says. "But I want to do something special for a dinner I'm making for my other half for our 12th anniversary. I want to make it, but with champagne batter instead of beer, Now, that might not sound romantic, but our very first meal out together was fish and chips, and so we have that on our anniversary every year. Trouble is, I had a go at it. I used some champagne we had left over from Christmas, and it's come out rather like a pumice stone. I thought champagne would just be a straight swap for the beer. Any ideas? Ask Rod. Over to you.
Yeah, it should be. Is this the champagne would have to be, as the beer does, because I think we say that in the recipe, it's got to be cold. Don't know why that wouldn't come out like a pumice
stone. It should work, shouldn't it? Do you remember we were on a boat in the Mediterranean, and we made gin and tonic battered fish and chips?
Yeah.
Where we used, because if you put some, like, we got to pick that tip in Korea, when we were battering the chicken karagi, probably pronunciation, apologise for it, but instead of twice frying it, we put vodka in the recipe. So we did the same thing with gin, but we used tonic water. And it did work really well, actually. And the gin gave it a flavour. The tonic water, it was like a slight savoury sweet, you know, with the fish, you know, with the batter. And also, obviously, with a slice of lemon on the top. It was great. It was one of our finest moments. But champagne should work. Battery is a thing.
I don't know, you know me, I might be talking absolute rubbish. Is it not the yeast in the beer that's not in the champagne that makes a difference?
Well, there's always, yeah, it's the fizz, really. I mean, there could be that as well, but not really, because you have yeast in champagne.
My two pennies was, don't waste the champagne and the fish and chips. Have a decent bottle and drink it out of a glass like you normally would.
Well, it's our anniversary, isn't it? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I've just been on Google, and champagne batter is, in fact, a thing that people are doing. And there's champagne battered chicken nuggets, which I've got to admit sounds something we could nick, actually, Kingy. But it says here, refrigerate the batter.
Yeah.
You have to stir constantly, keep smooth for 3 to 12 hours. So it's the coldness that seems to be quite important. Well, then you just dip your chicken in the champagne batter. Imagine that. Posh chicken nuggets.
Yeah. I imagine you can taste the beer in a batter, but can you taste champagne in a batter? I don't know.
Well, it's not about that, is it? It's about, like, you know, it's unlikely you could, but I guess that it's about the lightness and airiness of the batter rather than taste of the champagne.
In my head, I can just see a beautiful anniversary evening. Right now, it's two glasses of champagne and there's two pieces of fish stuck in the glasses at the moment. And I'm just going, oh, the champagne stuck in the fish in the glass. I'm just thinking, pour it in the glass, please, and get a decent fish and chips.
Oh, you're such a trollop. No. See, I'm thinking, the other day, you know, to keep her, my good lady, happy, I made Dover sole tempura. Goujons of Dover sole, but with a very light tempura batter. And obviously the secret to that was ice cold sparkling water that in the tempura really gives it, and don't whisk it too much, you disturb the bubbles. But can you imagine, like, Dover sole kind of goujons or tempura with champagne batter? That'd be rather lovely,
wouldn't
it? That
does sound quite nice.
Yeah.
And the dryness in the champagne. Prosecco.
Very nice.
Or do a fritto misto, Italian style, with Prosecco batter.
And don't forget to season your fish as well, you know, just before you stick it in the batter, because that's always a top tip.
Yeah, but I don't know why it's gone cardboardy.
No, I don't. Pumice stones are a bit, that's a bit heavy, that, like.
Or you said champagne stone left over from Christmas. Maybe it was champagne that was open, has lost its bubble.
Yes. Now you're talking. Yeah, like many things in life, when you lose your fizz, you're knackered. Yeah, it's true, isn't it, though? That wouldn't, you might as well, you know, it's not going to happen.
No, exactly.
Well, Rod, some pretty good thoughts there. First of all, make sure your champagne is fizzy and full of bubbles, and also keep it cold. We should probably grab a glass of champagne now, actually, as we take a very short break.
If you got problems, you'll be fine. Just drop the Agony Uncles a line.
Yes, welcome back to the Agony Uncles. But our next problem comes from Adam. Adam says, I'm a long-time listener, but a first-time correspondent. And Adam says, no need to choose an alias. We can carry on and get straight to the crux of the matter. Plus, I'd like to break the tradition and nominate Posh Tash as the oracle of wisdom before throwing it over to the boys.
What a mistake to make.
He's flying with the seat of his pants, isn't he?
Cool. You might have regret about this, Adam, but let's go for it anyway. The reason I have such a caveat is that my matter concerns wooing the female persuasion.
Ooh,
says Adam. So from my early 30s to my early 50s, I had no trouble in getting the ladies to give up their precious favours. Armed with a fun personality, says Adam, and a sense of humour, they couldn't get enough of me. Life was good. However, I hasten to add that A, I'm a Brit, B, I wasn't living in the UK at the time, and C, I am what can only be described as a minger. My sense of humour and personality were the key ingredients to opening hearts and passions. However, I returned to the UK in the mid-2000s, and since then, I've only had one dalliance, which lasted a few months. I'm now 61. I've joined all sorts of dating sites. I've had three types of reply. No, no, and fat chance. We know that these sites are nothing but beauty contests, so those of us who are not blessed with natural good looks are swiped left by the judgmental brigade. My profile is upbeat, a tad humorous, I'm polite, engaging. My profile photos are pretty good because I'm a photographer, but after one brief look, it's like the start of the Grand National, and they're off. Help me if you can. I've run out of ideas. Adam, starting with Postage. Over to you.
I'm actually not sure I am the oracle on this one, because I'm the ones that are swiping left, aren't I? I'm there swiping. We're the mean ones. Whereas the boys probably have got all the hot tips on how to woo when it's not so successful, etc. But I would say that I do agree, actually, being abroad, you know, the Brits, you can't beat a Brit sense of humour. It is unique. It is brilliant. And no matter where you go in the world, we're very dry. We're very sarcastic. So it is. And I think if you go around the world and you make it work, you stand out from the crowd. For good or bad, actually, some places. But I just think you're a bit hard on yourself. Minger, that's really mean. You know, you're very confident. You think you've got a great personality. You think you've got, you know, you had all the ladies, but you think you're unattractive. There is somebody out there for everybody. And it's not always about the looks, and it is about the personality. And I think online dating is rubbish anyway, because it's first impressions. So I think it's got to be getting out there, isn't it? Got to be getting out and meeting people. And if your personality is so fantastic, then it's got to be sitting in a restaurant or a bar, hanging with your friends and letting them see that personality. Because looks can't be that bad, because it worked once upon a time. You know, I just think you're being extra hard on yourself.
And also, he seems to have a little bit of self-awareness, so that's nice. And he's not—he doesn't seem to have a raging ego going at, you know, I'm gorgeous. You know, that's kind of.
That was good fun.
And he sounds like a laugh.
And do you know what? I don't think you should hunt it down. You know, just keep. You never know where it is. You know, the life is short, and the fun in life is you don't really know where it's going. So the next great thing could be around the corner at any point. You know, don't write yourself off just because you can't now, you never will. But you could be in the supermarket and you have a bit of a laugh with someone at the till and suddenly you get in conversation. It doesn't have to be on a dating site. It doesn't have to be in a bar. You never know where you're going to meet somebody. So, I mean, and I just, we haven't got a picture of him. I mean, we can't sit here and go, yeah, well, there you go. Pretty ugly. Never going to do it. Poor chap. He's just being hard on himself. What do you think, Dave?
I think it's funny, actually, because there's somebody you know recently started going back dating after a while, a young person. See, I think I'm dead fortunate that I've completely missed this internet dating thing. And it seems to be what he said was, oh, this is the way that we meet people these days. But I looked on it, but everybody was not being themselves. Mm-hmm. All the ladies seemed to be going, you know, pouting or fuzzy, that all the blokes seem to be there with a picture of the car behind them. Or it was all kind of like about this show thing. You know, all the men were trying to be James Bond and all the women seemed to be wanting to be the, I don't know, they just seemed to be have a duck pout. And pages after pages of this, you know, and I just thought, well, where are the, like, the just nice people that you just want to go out and have a drink with? Or where are you going to find these people? And I sometimes, yeah, so the dating sites work. But on the whole, you need to have a laugh with somebody to meet them, to have a conversation.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, they're setting this stall out. It's no mystery there. It can only be downhill from this mythical creature that you build yourself up to be on we can't say the sites, can we? It's sewers. But do you know what I mean? You've got, you're just writing this biography trying to sell yourself and maybe not present yourself how you actually are. If you say, I'm a really good bloke, a bit of a laugh, and I can cook, it's not going to go down well, is it? Mm. You know?
Mm. Oh, and it's brutal that someone could just swipe you left and it's all over. You know, you put yourself out there, you go, oh, like you, and then someone goes, no, no, no. I mean, that's hard.
It also chips away at your confidence as well, doesn't it? And it also chips away at your self-esteem, it chips away at, psychologically, it's not great.
It's so superficial.
Yeah, and you know, as you were saying, mate, where do you go from there? You know, if you set yourself up to somebody that you're not, that you really aren't, then what, you know, where do you go from there? Because it's a bit like a relationship supermarket, isn't it? Oh,
yeah.
I don't like the look of that, or him, yeah, or her, or that. Oh, yeah. God.
But you know what? The reality is, though, it is a way people do meet each other nowadays. It is a business, and it's happening. Yeah. But maybe that he's stuck. Adam's sort of stuck in, this is what I am. This is what I only think I'm good at. This is what I think I'm not great at, my looks, whatever. And he's just sticking to it and hoping something bites. Maybe he needs to sit down and rewrite this profile if he's going to be on the dating sites. Rethink who he is and his approach to it. Because maybe, you know, things do move on, and maybe there are certain sense of humour that don't work anymore, or the photo doesn't work. Maybe he just needs to try again, and a whole new guise, maybe.
Or just get out and about and meet people. It's a bit like the previous, you know, don't stay in and watch the box sets. We're kind of joking about that.
Yeah.
But it's true, a lot. You can get into a rut like that, and sometimes you need to kick up the backside. Just go out and meet people. You know, hiking clubs, for instance, if you just want, you know, it's full of mixed people, and a lot of people there are single, but you get to know them on a walk, get to have a laugh, a drink afterwards, in the old-fashioned way. Or indeed go to the pub or a club, you know, and just meet people. I don't know. I think it's terrible these days. I think the working from home thing as well, it must be really isolating. I really don't get that at all, especially for youngsters. You know, whether it be a factory or an office, it's the camaraderie that sometimes made dreary jobs really, really good fun.
Absolutely.
And people are missing out on that. Then you meet somebody at work in a canteen or whatever that you have a laugh with, and it starts like those little kernels of, and then, you know, then you have a drink after work, and so it goes on.
Yeah. And do you know, somebody said to me the other day, they went, oh, I know somebody, this really, really pretty, pretty girl, and she's with somebody. I don't know why they're together, because he's not anything special kind of attitude. And I was like, it's so wrong that we could have that attitude to go, they've got to look so beautiful and perfect together, because obviously this very beautiful girl is with this, and young actually, so we're not talking of a generation, an age where the man's got money, let's say, someone's in money might be the interest. Nothing at all like that. Too early for that. And I just went, you know what, it doesn't matter what you look like. Someone gets to know you, and you love somebody for who they are, genuinely who they are. You've just got to have a chance to have that.
I think, yeah, you do. And I think that, particularly for the younger generations, it's always been, there's been this constant message about the aesthetic. It's been about, it's this, it's that. You've got to have this, you've got to have that. You've got to look like this, you've got to look like that. If you're not this, you're not complete, you're not a whole person, you're not the... And it's just been this complete and utter browbeating of the emotion, to the neglect of that emotional connection that you have with somebody, whether it be fleeting or whether it be long term, and it's not always about the aesthetic.
Good advice, all. Adam, good luck to you. I hope that's helped, and keep us informed. Let us know how you get on, because we think you sound great.
Yeah.
I'll go out with you, mate.
Yeah.
There you go.
There'd be no jiggy-jiggy, but at least I'd go out for a pint.
I think he wants to go out with Posh Tash, actually.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, if you're down, now don't get drunk. Just send an email to the Agony Uncles. Well, it's time to head to Confidential Corner, and it's called My Fella's Feely Foibles. For this, we need a male and a female name. I do believe that Posh Tash would like to give us both, wouldn't she? Oh, cue the very cross face from Posh Tash.
One name written down, and that's a female name, but I haven't got the male. So we're going Belinda.
Belinda. And?
Just a name I'm not a massive fan of, so I don't really know where it came from.
Oh, okay.
And a male.
Sorry to all Belindas out there, by the way.
Yeah, sorry to all Belindas. I had a friend when I was younger called Belinda. I don't think I really liked her very much. And I will confess, and I'll apologise too. We went on a camp when I was about 8, and they're one of those old-fashioned roundabouts that were like wooden, and they had concrete around the edges of them.
Yes.
And I was forced to be, I think I was in a camp for a week or something with her, and I must admit, I might have spun the roundabout rather faster than it should have gone while she was on it, so she might have come off it.
Oh, might
and she possibly wasn't able to come to the rest of the day's camp that day. So, I'm sorry, Belinda, but at the time, I was only little at the time.
So
you've harboured that guilt all these years, and you've come out with it now.
Sorry, no.
By choosing her name for a problem on the podcast. Okay.
Anyway, but Belinda is going to be going with Max. Is that due?
Max. Okay, that's okay. Well, Belinda writes about Max and
says Carl Hoxton.
And
yeah.
Maximilian
he's got
and Belinda.
Really huge beard. He's got really cool glasses. He's got turned up jeans, a pair of DMs.
Oh, does really he? Cool. Okay. Jeans, a t-shirt with a very expensive jacket on top.
My son, actually. Yeah.
Well, Max. Max has. Well, Belinda writes about Max. Dear Agony Uncles, I'm going out with a man called Max, and he's quite nice. We've been together a few weeks now. We have a pleasant time together. One thing he does, though, strikes me as odd. I want to know if it's just something that men do. When we sit and watch TV, he puts his hand down the front of his trousers, into his pants, and holds himself. When I first saw this on our third date, I asked him what he was doing, but he didn't actually know that he was doing it. Since then, I've noticed he does it every time he sits down to watch something. He says it's something he's always done. It's comforting. But he'll be meeting some of my family soon, and if it's involuntary, I'd be worried that the whole time he'll be chatting with my brother, he'll suddenly slip his hand down his pants. I don't think that would go down well. Is this normal? Asks Belinda, now fully recovered from her incident on the roundabout.
No. No. Belinda, what I suggest you do if he's in polite company is get, like, you know, can you remember that Highway 66 Revisited, that Bob Dylan track where he's got this, I'm in a suit. Get those cards and just
cards
go, hands off, you willy. So every time he's kind of going for it, just flip it out really quickly and go, hands off, you willy, and then put it back again. Just to remind him that, that's right.
You don't jostle in public, do you?
No.
I mean, there was a, there used to be a spark that used to work with an electrician, and he was like that. He was one of those men who always wore, like, you remember nylon football shorts, not like the funky ones, and they were always a bit baggy in the leg, and he'd always be having a jostle. And, you know, it was just like, oh, you know, it makes you squirm. Also, when he comes to shake your hand, I didn't want to do it. You know, what happens if he's doing that in front of the telly? I make you a cup of tea, love. He goes off and he passes you a biscuit. You don't want to eat it, do you?
No.
Not when it's been down his, you know, his house, your father.
From childhood, because I think little boys, once they find their willies,
yes,
they do sort of stick their hands down there. And, you know, as a mum, you go, get your hands out your pants, sweetheart, in your own time. You know, get your hands out your pants. And I think if mothers don't say that enough to teach you, you shouldn't put your hands down your pants. I think it can be a comfort thing that a little boy finds his willy and then he puts it down there and it maybe just he got told never to take his hand out.
Well, you see, the thing is, I think that's exactly true because you do that. We did it with all the boys that'll go because it's a fascinating thing once you find it. You know,
yeah,
it's like, whoa, what's this thingy? You can put it around, wrap it around your little finger and all of that. It's great.
Feels quite nice.
And it was like this great thing. There was, I love the opening to Kes. Because the brother comes in, he goes, right, hands off, cocks, on socks.
You know, I mean, like, sometimes at night I wake up and, you know, I've been, you know, I'm all curled up in a ball in a fetal position and my hands may be, like, you know, comforting myself. But that's in the privacy of my own self.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know, that's different, actually, but not while you're watching the telly.
No, a sportsman, though, often an outdoor adventurers, they say if you need to keep your hands warm, that men should put their hands down their pants. So lots of rugby players will stick their hands down their shorts to keep their hands warm before they catch a ball in the cold game. But I think they're doing that for a purpose. To
so did you used
sport.
To do that, Simon, when you played rugby?
No, I normally had it down down the front of the second row, you know. Get off us, Kingy, you pervert. Yeah, no, sorry, dude, my hands are freezing. Put them down your own pants. Yeah, no, that is true, that, actually, yeah, because our coach used to tell us to do that when it was freezing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I it was rather uncomfortable because, actually, what happens is your voice rises about 5 octaves and you sound a bit like, pass me the ball!
Well, you know, I always remember, like, Polaroid pictures. You know, when Polaroid cameras first came out, they came complete with a cold clip. And in cold weather, you used to put your picture in this clip and put it under your arms.
Oh.
You put your cold clip, because apparently that's quite warm too. But there's something less offensive about putting your, you know, in your oxters than it is your nuts, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'd like to think that maybe Max would say to Belinda, do you know what, sweetheart, I really genuinely don't realise I'm doing it, and I absolutely don't want to offend your family. So if you see my hands going down there, please give me a nudge and a kick. I don't want to do it. But if Max is going, can't help it, I think that's a bit rude. I mean...
Yeah, it's not. It's not. I think he's stuck in that. What are those periods? The first period of development as a human being is the anal period, isn't it? And then you go on to something else. But there's quite a lot of people stuck in that period where their hands go down their front.
It's, like it's a toddler.
Like a toddler. It's better than the you know, the other one.
I think Annie should say to him, "Come here, love. If you need comfort, let me do it for you." You know. Well, she loves him. You know what I mean? That'd give him comfort.
And if in front of the family,
then,
though.
Hey?
Not in front of the family.
No, but in front of the telly. Be all right.
Could you pass the roast potatoes? I'm sorry, I've got my hand down my boyfriend's pants.
Just having a jostle. Oh, dear God. Yes. No, well, you could buy him those underpants that are so tight he can't get his hands in.
Yeah.
Yes, a tighter belt. Good call.
Yeah, like and sew his pockets up as well.
Or alternatively, you could just give him a slap and tell him to stop being a prat.
Yeah, and grow up.
And grow up.
Aye.
Get your hands out your pants, you pervert.
Aye.
Well, there you go, Belinda. Some fine advice. And no, it isn't normal. Unless, of course, he's still a toddler, which some men may well be.
If your life's in a mess, then the email address is theagonyuncles@thehairybikes.co.uk. Yeah.
As always, we send our thanks to you for listening to us and for sending us in your lovely thoughts, comments, problems and conundrums.
Remember, the email address to send us your problems to is agonyuncles@thehairybikers.co.uk. That's agonyuncles@thehairybikers.co.uk.
We'll have new episodes for you every Friday. You can always rely on the Agony Uncles podcasts for a little weekend-like relief. Just follow and subscribe to make sure you don't miss a single one.
So, from Poshtash...
Goodbye.
The Thin White Duke.
Well, goodbye.
And Trimmels.
Ta-ra.
Yeah, bye-bye, everybody.
Bye, safe week.